are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, February 5th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Dr. Rob Davidson, Executive Director of the Committee to Protect Medicare and the ACA. The doctor, you may remember, who had an interesting exchange with Mike Pence in a diner in Iowa. Also on the program today, impeachment vote in the Senate. Susan Collins will vote to acquit because he's learned his lesson. And Doug Jones will vote to convict. Meanwhile, 71% of Iowa's numbers are in, and Joe Biden lost. And apparently two people won, maybe. Trump hits an all-time high in lies during his State of the Union address / Price is Right knockoff. Meanwhile, Biden's donors are quaking and Buttigieg moves into second place in New Hampshire. Rand Paul outs the whistleblower on the floor of the Senate. The top Navy SEAL officer quits over Trump's war criminal promotional tour. Lastly, Gavin Newsom just pardoned Bayard Rustin. Posthumously, obviously, a major icon of both the civil rights movement and I don't know if it was necessarily the gay movement at that point, but civil rights movement, who was arrested for having had sex with men. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program. Everyone is here. Jamie, it turns out, is alive. Welcome, Jamie. Welcome back.
Here I am. Can't keep me down.
No, she is. She's still breathing. Let's see. Where are we now? Okay. We've got a lot of stuff to cover. It's been sort of insane around here. I'm still blurry eyed. We have 71% in. Is that right? 71% in from the Iowa caucus. And everybody has moved to New Hampshire. To a large extent, nothing has really changed. Now, yesterday, or not yesterday, 2 days ago, we had experts that we spoke to, Dave Weigel, Bobby Bigwheel, and they were telling us that, look, the actual number of delegates, not that big of a deal with Iowa because there's just not that many. It's a fraction of what you'll ultimately need. It's all about momentum and the narrative that comes out of it. And there are clearly, I mean, there's a couple of narratives that's coming out of it. One is Joe Biden lost big time. I've got a story here in my packet of donors saying, like, this is not what I anticipated. And everybody's going to hold off on giving him money until see how he performs in New Hampshire. New Hampshire is make or break for Joe Biden. Because if he comes in third or fourth in New Hampshire, he's going to flag in. Well, he's certainly not going to do so well in Nevada. And then he's going to go kaput in South Carolina. Because if he comes in second in South Carolina, forget it. Even if it's a close first in South Carolina, he's in big trouble. As for the narrative as to who won, Well, we've told you there are multiple metrics that are used in the Iowa caucus. One is they are now reporting what the first popular vote was. Then they give you the realignment. And then they give you the delegates that were awarded as a function of the realignment. And even poor Steve Kornacki can't believe how messed up this is. Now, I think there's a very good argument that, like, you know, if you're going to get only 71% of the votes in by Wednesday, that maybe you should just wait till Thursday. But what are they going to do? I mean, if the Iowa Democratic Party had not been like sort of like doling this out so that there's a new narrative every time, we wouldn't have this problem. And I do think it is a problem on some level. I don't know if they're consciously doing it. I wouldn't want to be sitting in that office with the press going, well, you got to tell us what you have right now. And I find it hard to believe that they'd be in a position where they could say, like, we're only going to take the numbers from these areas and not those areas. We're going to do this in a conscious level. I mean, it's possible, but here is, you'd think they'd want to help Joe Biden more. Maybe there's just not enough to work with. Here's Steve Kornacki talking about how messed up what is hopefully the last Iowa caucus that we will ever deal with.
There are three different categories. They were all just released at once. What you're seeing on your screen right now, this is the state delegate equivalent category. This is, so the numbers you see underneath, 359 for Buttigieg, 334 for Sanders, 243 for Elizabeth Warren. These are state delegate equivalents. Now, remember, there are about 2,100 of these statewide. So Buttigieg with 359, that's accounting for 27%. You can start to do the math of what that accounts for. These are, this is a complicated formula where each precinct in the state is worth a certain number of state delegate equivalents. They work their way up. Notably, let me make sure I saw this right. This is the final product. This is the initial preference. Yes, we have a discrepancy right now. Huh. The initial preference when people showed up, this is, remember, these are not final results right now. He said 62% of precincts. We got to see what that exactly accounts for in terms of votes here. But right now, the numbers that the Iowa Democratic Party just released, the initial preference in these precincts, you can see, was Sanders 24, Buttigieg 21, Warren 19, Biden 15. You can see Klobuchar 13. And you can see what happens. Remember, in every precinct, 15%, the magic number. So let's show you what happened then. Again, for all these precincts, this is the second, this is the reallocation. So watch, remember those numbers? Now watch this. And there you go. Sanders on the second allocation continues to lead much tighter. So how does Sanders lead in the state delegate equivalent? How does Buttigieg lead in the state delegate equivalent if he's not leading on the second allocation? It gets into, and I got to take a look here very closely. Yeah. But my theory, my suspicion here, strong suspicion would be talking about. These counties are weighted differently here. The rural counties have a little bit more clout when it comes to the state delegate equivalents. And you can see here, Buttigieg in dark blue. These are rural counties. Sanders purple, College County. Watch, 52% for Sanders here. These counties lose influence, lose clout in the state delegates. And so therefore, I think what you're seeing is the clout of the Buttigieg counties in the state delegate equivalent putting him on top.
All right, so there you have it. So the fact is that in the first round, Bernie Sanders got more votes. And then, of course, there's realignment. You have candidates who don't cross the threshold of 15%, so they go to their second choice. And apparently, even after that, Bernie Sanders got more votes. But because Pete Buttigieg got them in counties that have, for whatever reason, I'm not sure what the formula is.
It's like the Electoral College, right?
It is like the Electoral College.
And may we say that a lot of people who've been making the sort of, I think it's at this point, unhelpful point, frankly, because we live in the world as it is, but very accurate point after Trump won to keep reminding people that Hillary Clinton got over 3 million more votes. There's a contingent of people that I wonder if they'll be sort of beating their chests about how
Bernie
got more votes. I mean, the bottom line is each vote should be a vote. If we're counting it that way in the proper democratic way that people have been bleeding about the last couple of years, clear win for Bernie Sanders.
Well, I mean, we don't know that because we don't even know the totals yet. I mean, it could be an even clearer win.
Indeed.
Or he may not end up with the same with more votes. Right now, he has 4,000 more votes, but this is in the first round. In the second round, about 1,300 more votes. So the bottom line is, Buttigieg and Sanders are coming out as the victors here. Buttigieg, if only because nobody anticipated him coming in second. Mm-hmm. And so it's a victory because of that narrative, right? At the end of the day.
Yeah. But even if Buttigieg ekes out a win here, I think we should remember the role that the second round plays here, because he's combining everybody who initially went for Klobuchar, everyone who initially went for Biden in some of those places. And even that might not be enough to put him over the top of Sanders.
That's right. That's true.
With all of these dregs.
That's true. But nevertheless, even if you put that aside, he got 21% of the almost 21.5% of the vote. He came in second, which is a win for him.
It's the Rubio. I mean, it's this state he performed well.
The thing is that I think once you get to Nevada and South Carolina, Buttigieg has a problem, but who knows how much momentum he will get going up to that point, going into Super Tuesday. We don't know, folks.
We can only look forward to Bernie making fun of how he drinks water.
Exactly. So, Pete,
never seen a guy drink so much. He's a young guy. He's thirsty all the time. It's bizarre.
Why are your shoes so small?
I think we all know what that means.
We know what that means.
I would be fine with having Mayor Pete be the primary adversary here.
That would be preferable.
I think ultimately, it's the problem that they're going to have. You start to hear people freaking out about Joe Biden, and they're starting to look to Bloomberg, and they're also starting to look back to Klobuchar and to Buttigieg, and that bodes well. But also today, obviously, impeachment, and we will cover some of that. The trial, the final vote will happen around 3 or 4 o'clock this afternoon. And, it's pretty clear what's happening. There's a lot of people who say that the vote that we're going to be talking about when we talk to Dr. Rob Davidson, that's taking place in the House tomorrow, could very well have as much implications as I think that witness vote will have for senators who are on the cusp in these purple states, because they're going to have to vote to cut Medicaid, and that could be a problem for them. But we will talk about that in a moment. Let me just remind you, it's a new year. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. But it is time to get comfortable with new bedding. And now Brooklinen also has loungewear, towels, more. It's the home of the internet's favorite sheets. Brooklinen has over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting. I have told you folks ad nauseum about my Brooklinen sheets. I get the crisp, cool cotton ones. I have multiple sets of Brooklinen sheets. I love them. They're incredibly comfortable, and they're going to last me. I don't know if they're going to last a lifetime, but I'm at that age where it's very possible. I got a new down comforter. I got the lightweight version. I get too hot, folks. And I got the, of course, the hyperallergenic one. I didn't get the actual down one. I got the, what are you going to do? But I love it. It's great.
No.
Exactly. And I don't have that problem anymore. Brooklinen is a direct-to-consumer bedding company, meaning they just work directly with manufacturers and then directly with customers. There's no middlemen. It's just a great product and service. Brooklinen offers other essentials like towels, shower curtains, bath mats, and even launched an ultra-soft loungewear that makes you feel like you never left bed. You know, like Sunday, like T-shirts, that type of thing. Does that make sense, everybody? On a Sunday, you wake up, you get those T-shirts? All right. They look good. I think I'm going for one of those. You get all luxury products without the luxury markup. If you like softness, comfort, essentials to help you relax, Brooklinen has it all. Brooklinen.com, perfect place to hit refresh on the new year. Go on. Make yourself comfortable. Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, all their comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. You can get 10% off your first order and free shipping on all the new sheets when you use the promo code MAJORITY only at brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen, BROOKLINEN.com. Enter the code MAJORITY. Brooklinen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. Also sponsoring the program today, Capterra. If you need to find software, but you have other things to do, like every other human being in the world, things you'd probably rather be doing, cut to the chase with Capterra. It's a website that millions of people use monthly to find software for their team or their business. It is a free, Capterra is completely free. It's an online resource. They simplify your software search in just a few steps. First, you use their free resources and guides to pinpoint the problem and identify the software features you need. Then you can filter options to find the right software for your industry. There are more than 700 specific categories of software. Then you can compare them side by side, save your favorites to a short list. And they have free in-depth software guides and tools, plus over 1 million reviews from actual users. Capterra gives you access to everything you need to know before you buy. You can spend less time trying to find software and more time doing what you do best. Not only do I enjoy just browsing through Capterra just to find out all the different businesses that exist, I've been using this as a way to come up with ideas for features for our app. I mean, I don't think that's what this is meant for, but I'm looking through it and then I see stuff like, I don't know. I mean, you know, polling. They have online polling stuff. They have legal research software. They have library automation software, license management software, live streaming software, loan origination software. If we want to get into the financial, we want to financialize the majority report. There's tons of this stuff. Visit Capterra.com/majority for free today to find the software tools you need for your business. Go there even if you don't think you need it, because you may be surprised to find out what they have. And they're not selling you anything. They're just giving you opportunity to look at real reviews of these softwares. Capterra.com/majority. Capterra, that's Capterra.com/majority. Capterra, software selection simplified. And lastly, ladies and gentlemen, you know that I am a little bit frugal, as they say. Well, hi. You know that Honey is the free online shopping tool that automatically finds the best promo codes and then applies them to your cart. No more sitting Mila down telling her she's got to search for coupon codes every time she wants to buy anything from any one of these nutso stores that she's looking at. I don't even want to talk about it. And look, saving with Honey feels even better than great. Feels like boarding a plane and realizing you have an entire row to yourself. It's a freebie. It's not, I mean, it's not just you get a discount, but it's a free discount. You don't have to look for it. You don't have to, it's just all of a sudden it shows up. Honey has found over 18 million members, over $2 billion in savings. That's a lot of money, unless, of course, you're Michael Bloomberg. Plus, Honey supports over 30,000 stores online, including Macy's, Target, Sephora, Best Buy, and more. They're adding more stores every day. You know users love Honey since it has over 100,000 five-star reviews on the Google Chrome store. When I go, you know, Mila's always doing some like online shopping or browsing. That is, she's 14. That's what she does. I mean, it used to be I would make her go and Google for a coupon code, because I'm like, there's always a coupon code. And now they've shut those down. It makes it much harder. Honey, boom. Using Honey feels pretty great. You can think of it as a little daily victory. Plus, it's free to use and installs in just a few seconds. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/majority. That's joinhoney.com/majority. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Dr. Rob Davidson. We saw a video of him questioning Mike Pence on the Medicaid cuts that are coming that are being proposed and executed by the Trump administration that we're going to see in, I think, just exclusively Republican states, knock on wood. And we will talk about those and more. Dr. Rob Davidson, the executive director of the Committee to Protect Medicare and the ACA. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Dr. Rob Davidson. He is an emergency physician in West Michigan, and he is the executive director of the Committee to Protect Medicare. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
So just to place you, so that, and I think you know this, but so that folks know how we found you, it was from this video. You were in a diner eating, and Mike Pence walks in. Let's just play a quick clip of this.
Mr. Vice President,
I'm an emergency doctor. I'm worried about the plans they talked about last week of maybe cutting Medicare, and then the rollout today of cutting Medicaid. I work in one of the poorest counties in Michigan, and my patients depend on expanded Medicaid. So how is that going to affect my patients?
Yeah. I hadn't heard about cutting Medicaid.
Okay.
I think people remember we played this the other day. So now, do you do this often when you run into a vice president?
Yeah, every time I've run into a vice president, I have questioned him about health care. So yes, 100% of the time.
That was pretty stunning. I mean, I guess we'll circle back around because I want to get a sense of, you know, your experience of that conversation. But tell folks what has happened in terms of Medicaid in particular. I guess let's start the way you did. What are the proposed cuts to Medicare that the Trump administration has been talking about?
I mean, the proposed cuts to Medicare, you know, I think it started with their rollout of increased privatization of Medicare with increasing Medicare Advantage plans. That was, I think, October last year in the lakes in Florida. Trump, you know, reported in Vanity Fair that he said it would be a fun second term project to cut Medicare. And then I think a couple of weeks ago now in Davos, Switzerland, he was talking on CNBC and he said, yes, in fact, that would be on the table, cutting Medicare and or Social Security. And he said that would be the easiest thing to do. Very strange choice of words. So that's kind of the Medicare piece. And that's what I started with. That's why I was in Des Moines that day with a committee to protect Medicare, talking about these possible Medicare cuts with, you know, doctors from Iowa that joined me for a press conference. One member of the press showed up for that press conference. Now, you know, a little bit more of the press is listening to the alarm that we're calling out at my committee about these proposed cuts. And then, it, you know, because of the news of the day, last Thursday was the day this encounter occurred, and that was the day that Seema Verma, the CMS administrator for Trump, rolled out these block grant waiver proposal that, you know, everyone I can see that is talking about this in an honest way tells us this will, in fact, cut folks from Medicaid.
Okay. And so tell us, and CMS is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. When they roll out this proposal, are they actually just basically introducing, they're basically announcing that you as a state can apply for a waiver. Is that right?
Right. Apply for a waiver. Currently, Medicaid is funded by the federal government on a kind of a per person, per need basis. So, you know, for instance, when there's a recession and more people lose jobs and more people qualify for Medicaid, the federal share of spending on health care for those folks will go up because, of course, they need that. You know, people with diabetes, if they have a job or they lose their job through no fault of their own, still have diabetes. They still need $300 a month insulin. So with the block grant, states could say, listen, why don't you just give us a lump sum of money and then let us, and the word he used was innovate, let us innovate and figure out how to cover everyone. But, you know, if the needs go up in our state, we still get that pot of money that you're giving us. It doesn't change, and yet our needs go up, so more people lose out. The other thing they can do is choose to cut certain services. They can, you know, cut certain drugs that are currently covered for prescription drug benefit under Medicaid. So, it is a cut. There's no way around it. And there's no way that Pence didn't understand that. I mean, Seema Verma used to be his Medicaid administrator in the state of Indiana when he was governor there. So this has been a conservative dream for ages, decades.
30 years they've been trying to block grant. And so there's like you say, there's multiple problems that come with a block granting. One is that it does not act as that economic stabilizer. In other words, it doesn't basically expand as the need gets greater in crises. It also does not increase along with the cost of medicine. And like you say, the states can get sort of clever because the federal government has basically said, I mean, this is the difference between just sort of, me giving $10 to my kid and saying, you know, do whatever you want with it, as opposed to making sure that she spends it on, you know, not on junk food or whatever it is. And she can then go out and basically, spend $5 on I don't want to kid this metaphor too much, but the idea is that they can use this money in other ways that really don't have anything to do with providing health insurance for people.
Right. And my governor is Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who gave the, you know, I thought an amazing response to the State of the Union last night. And I was there and we talked beforehand, and she helped us usher in expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act when she was the minority leader of the state Senate here in Michigan, and got a Republican governor to expand Medicaid. And we've had, you know, nearly 750,000 folks in Michigan benefit from that. Their study, I think a Kaiser Family reported it recently, specifically on Michigan, showing the economic benefit of expanded Medicaid. The fear was that the federal government was going to give them 100% in the first year and then scale it back to, I think, 90% eventually by next year. And the reality is, even though the federal share has scaled back, because people are healthier, because they can afford treating their chronic illnesses, they can work more, the actual tax base has increased. I think 30,000 jobs in Michigan created directly as a result of expanded Medicaid. So, you know, this is, it just doesn't make sense to me that they try. And I think that's why he dodged the question and tried to revert back to things he did. And then eventually just said agree to disagree, because he knows what it is. They all know what it is. And they know if they say what it is, people won't like it. You know, it's an election year. They're trying to get reelected. So they just say whatever they want. They lie at will. And I mean, State of the Union was, you know, full of healthcare lies again, about every other aspect of healthcare. And, you know, I think they just say what they want and they get away with it. He just wasn't expecting to meet up with a guy in a diner who, you know, I mean, again, I don't know this issue like a policy wonk. I mean, I have a biology degree and a medical degree, and I work clinically as a doc, but I read, you know, and I try to learn as much as I can. And so, you know, with my limited understanding of these policies, he wasn't ready for that. No one briefed him, no one gave him talking points. And I think that's what we saw unfold.
Yeah, he did look like a deer in the headlights, and we did try and dance around it quite a bit. You were pretty, you zeroed in on him pretty quickly, I think, as he tried to sort of pretend like he didn't understand what you said. And, you know, the first thing, that just in that first exchange where you said that you're going to get cuts in Medicaid, and he goes, I don't think we're going to do cuts in Medicare. And so well, give us, I mean, so you know firsthand the implications of this expanded Medicaid, and I want to get into that as just your experience as an emergency doctor, but I also get the sense, I mean, you're on this, you're executive director of this committee, you're in Iowa, so you're aware at least of some of the, you know, the broader politics involved in this. Where would you anticipate what states, or at least, you know, if not specific ones, then the profile of the states that are going to be applying for this waiver? I mean, presumably the 13 states, I think it is now, that did not expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, I would imagine would be prime targets or prime applicants to get this waiver, because they're going to continue. If they weren't going to expand Medicaid, they certainly are interested in dismantling it as much as they can.
Right. I think that, and I think, you know, anywhere that there is a Republican, and I guess I have to, I don't know the nuances of the directive, if it's an executive decision at the state level, or if it requires, you know, something passing through their houses. But we have enough, you know, majority Republican state legislatures plus governorships in this country that, I mean, I think that would be the profile, you know, certainly, because those would be the places where, you know, folks are more likely to be in charge that share Vice President Pence's views on, you know, on Medicaid in general and whether or not we should be helping out poor people when it comes to health care. That's the fear.
Now,
and why should we in Michigan, you know, why should we in Michigan have a different set of, I mean, the whole healthcare system is so patchwork and hodgepodge, if you want to call it a system, obviously it's a series of systems, but it's so patchwork anyways. I mean, I guess why should this be any different? Let's let certain states do one thing and others do the other. And if you just happen to be born in Michigan versus Alabama, well, you know, good on you.
Right. Well, there's so much in our society today that's determined that way. It's all just a coin toss. And I guess maybe a bunch of coins that get tossed in the air. Now, there's a vote tomorrow in the House. I imagine you're familiar with it. And what the what the vote is it's under the CRA, which has been used in the past to the Congressional Review Act. It's been used in the past to undo executive actions that have been done within a certain time frame. The Republicans did this with a bunch of executive actions by Obama. And then once they do that, once they pass that, to reinstitute any type of rule like that, Congress has to authorize it with a 2/3 vote. So this is like, this is a sledgehammer, as it were. And they're going to vote on this in the House, and they will probably pass it, which would not allow the president to block grant. But then it goes to the Senate, and the Republicans are sure to shoot it down. How do you think this plays as a an issue in the fall, when you have a half dozen or so Republican senators running in sort of purplish states on their refusal, their essential, like, voting to allow for cuts in Medicaid?
Right. Yeah. And I'm kind of anxious to see what folks like Collins. I mean, she's the only one in the purple state that I think might go along with this. I think, you know, Tillis and McSally and who is it? Gardner, I think, is already toast. You know, maybe Joni Ernst. I don't know. I mean, I think they're at least, I mean, the thing is, have them go on record. I mean, that's what we're trying to do as a committee. I mean, what we're rolling out over the next several months is an accountability campaign. And that's really all it is. Like, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I'm not going to tell you to vote for, you know, Bernie or Biden or Buttigieg or any of them. I'm not going to tell you to vote for or against Donald Trump. I just want you to know what exactly they're doing. That is the point of what we're doing. We're saying, hey, doctors, you know what's going on at the bedside. Let's tell people what's going on. So at least this vote, forcing a vote in the Senate, people will know what's going on. So when any of these Republican senators have to go out and talk to their constituents, it'll be front and center that this person voted to allow the administration to take health care away from people, 70 million people in this country. So I say, bravo. If that's a tool that they have, I'm not familiar with all the machinations of Congress, but that if that CRA is a tool they have that will force McConnell, because the HR3 named after Elijah Cummings for prescription drug prices, that is dead in the Senate, even though that was a bipartisan bill passed in the House to keep down prescription drug prices. So at least for once, they can make Mitch McConnell take it up and make people go on record. I think
that's right. It's a privileged a motion when it gets to the Senate. So the minority, in rare instances, the minority in the Senate can actually force a vote. And this is one of those rare instances. So tell us, just from your experience as an emergency doctor, what difference it made to expand Medicaid in Michigan. And we should just tell people that the ACA expanded Medicaid if states took it, because the Supreme Court said it can't be forced on people to expand this federal program in a very weird decision.
Right.
Went from 100% of poverty to the 138% of poverty became eligible for expanded Medicaid. What did you see as a doctor in the wake of that expansion?
I mean, I can, it's hard to say on a person for person basis, because you don't really have a discussion with someone. I don't ask them what they have unless they tell me, hey, I'm worried about costs. I have a high deductible plan. What do we, can we figure this out? So it's not a front and center discussion. Hey, you have Medicaid. Did you not have Medicaid? And how does that affect your life?
Right.
We know from a population basis, A, in the state, and B, in my county, and in the population we serve at my hospital, that more people had insurance than had it before. So I can just tell you stories of patients who I would see historically who come in with a blood pressure of 200 over 100. That's high. And not suffering from that at all. They may be there with an ankle sprain, and we check their vitals and we say, hey, you got high blood pressure. Maybe we should put you on something. Okay, we need you to follow up with somebody. Here, why don't you try to go see this person? Well, they don't have any insurance, so they can't go see that person. They get a month or two worth of blood pressure meds. You see them again a few years later, and their blood pressure is 200 over 100, and they're still doing okay. But the problem is, if that happens enough, 20 years from now, they're the ones having strokes and kidney failure and heart attacks. And so for those folks, it's critical. People with diabetes, people with hypertension, maybe less so the ER population and the ER visits, because eventually most people will come in with chest pain or shortness of breath or stroke symptoms, whether or not they have insurance, and then deal with the bankruptcy later. But it's those folks with the chronic conditions, and I think diabetes is such a key one because of the cost of insulin, that when they couldn't afford it previously and just let it go, because mostly diabetes is a silent disease, it's a silent killer, that the major ramifications happen, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. So if you're 40 with diabetes and you feel okay, it's not on the top of your list. You're just trying to go work and pay your bills. Those folks who then qualified, this is a lifesaver, And I told them, I said, it's a godsend, or, a lifeline, or whatever you want to call it. But it is literally a life-changing event to have some kind of coverage. Coverage under Medicaid is a little skinnier than coverage under other plans. And that's, whether that's okay or not is a whole different discussion. But, oh, my Lord, it is some coverage. It is the ability to see a doctor, the ability to get insulin, to treat the chronic disease, keep them out of the ER and the ICU, save money, they work more. It's crazy to me that, the mantra of people like, Mike Pence, Paul Ryan, pull yourself up from your bootstraps, the kind of Atlas shrug carrying crowd, that say, pull yourself up from your bootstraps. And they say, but we don't want to help you actually do that. The long-term thinking of investing in someone's healthcare now, so 20 years from now, they're still productive members of society, just doesn't exist. Their lives exist on 2, 4, and 6 year election cycles. And it really hurts the ability of folks like me, my wife's a family practice doctor, and folks like her, to do our jobs, because these guys are thinking about the next election and who's giving them contributions to get reelected.
It's fascinating that in the way you put it, in terms of the implications 20 years down the road, because we've seen in the wake of the expansion of Medicaid, varying different reports that give sort of a mixed outlook, if you will, as to the implications of it. But if I hear you correctly, 20 years down the road, we should see an improvement in the overall health outcomes or health status of that population of people who were living for at least some time between 100% and 138% of poverty or so.
Yeah. And again, in the short term, we have seen the economic benefit to a state like Michigan with, you know, 30,000 jobs created that they can attribute to expansion. You know, more people have insurance. They need to see folks. They have, you know, they have greater need for healthcare. So there's more healthcare out there to be had, you know, for consumers to have. And then again, those people are missing less days of work. They're making more, they're contributing more. And that helps the overall tax base of the state as well. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like a no-brainer. Again, all we can do is point out the truth of it and what our committee is doing. Just to get a little plug, committeetoprotect.org if people want to learn more about it. But what the committee is doing is taking doctors to say, hey, you've been doing this at the bedside forever. Why don't you step out and speak out and tell people? And, you know, I see a lot of docs have commented on the Twitter video. And we're trying to get through those and reply saying, hey, you know, good job, way to go, way to represent. It's like, hey, join us, you know.
Right.
It isn't that hard. It rarely involves talking to the vice president. It mostly involves, you know, writing an op-ed or doing a video or, you know, some other form of action where you can advocate for your patients. So hopefully that helps.
What is your perspective on Medicare for All? And I'm curious as to what your sense is as to your fellow doctors' perspective on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually polling now. Kaiser Family Foundation, I think it's 51% of physicians now support a type of plan like Medicare for All. Listen, I'm a supporter. I know that if we had no system in place in this country, then Medicare for All makes 100% sense. It's the only system that does make sense. You know, we pay, and you know all the stats, and I'm sure you've had people talk about it. We pay twice as much per person for healthcare mm-hmm. as most other countries. We have lower life expectancy. We have higher infant mortality. And we have, you know, roughly two-thirds of bankruptcies attributable to medical debt. So that wouldn't be there. And we'd spend less overall and we'd get better outcomes. Now, I'm a realist and I understand the system we have. And so politically, I think it's tough. I think if a Medicare for All candidate wins the nomination and wins the presidency, no matter how much they want to say, well, if we just work really hard and organize well, we can get this through right now. Like, you still need 60 votes in the Senate for this. I don't think it's going to pass on a 51-vote budget resolution because of the sheer increase in spending. You know, so I am a supporter, 100%. However, anything someone can do to increase the ability for my patients to afford health care, I say bring it on. You right. know, my senator in Michigan has proposed a Medicare over 55 buy-in. Absolutely. Adam Schatz in Hawaii has proposed a Medicaid buy-in program. Yes, do that. You know, all of these programs, public option, absolutely. I think eventually things like public option and all will roll into people all kind of saying, hey, this is a better option. I'm going to choose that. I know the Center for American Progress put out a Medicare Extra plan, which was sort of a buy-in option for employers and employees into the Medicare system. And then every new child gets rolled into Medicare. So 65 years from now, it's Medicare for All, just by virtue of time. You know, that's probably a little long, but again, anything that helps expand healthcare, I think, is a good thing. And we shouldn't, you know, cut off our nose to spite our face or sacrifice the good for the sake of the perfect. What I do know is the current administration is going the other way. That's what people need to understand.
When you talk to other doctors who don't support that as an end goal, right, regardless of how you get there or whatnot, what is their rationale? Is it just simply like they're afraid they're not going to make as much money?
I mean, I have to be honest. I think that's a lot of it. Yeah, I think that's most of it. I mean, you know, the AMA might get mad at me, although they did come out against this block granting, and other professional societies may get mad at me for saying this publicly, but we kind of know that. But I think the reason you're seeing more physicians supporting, you know, sort of a more public investment in healthcare rather than keeping it completely private is that we have a real shift in the way doctors, the makeup of the profession, a lot more women, a lot more people of color than there were, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. The other reality is many more doctors now are employees, you know, so they work for an entity. They work for a hospital system or a large group kind of practice. So they're not, you know, just sort of small business owners out there only worried about kind of what they're bringing in. You know, they're more saying, hey, I'm getting paid X, and I'm trying to just do my job and take care of people. And I feel like I'm banging my head against the wall dealing with denials of coverage. I had a friend that works with me on this committee, and it was just an aside. He said he got a prescription prescribed by his doctor. It was on the formulary. In the 2 days it took him to get to the pharmacy to pick it up, it was taken off of the formulary. It was supposed to be $20, and he got there, and they said that'll be $682.
Oh, jeez.
2 days. So his wife got on the phone, called around, and found him a discount program somewhere else where he could get it for like $50. But again, it's like that kind of madness that makes us as doctors, I mean, it adds to our workload. It adds the number of people we need out there pushing papers. It doesn't make any sense. And I think you're seeing a shift in doctors, you know, mostly for those reasons. The money piece of it is sort of less front and center. It's more about the service we can provide to our patients.
Well, we undoubtedly have a lot of doctors who listen to this program. And if they want to get involved in the Committee to Protect Medicare, what should they do?
I think probably the quickest way is to go to committeetoprotect.org, and they can sign up on there, send a message. It'll get to our general email. You know, we get that. We'll get back in touch with people. And then, you know, mostly it's things. I mean, if people go to our Facebook or Twitter, they'll see me doing social videos about certain issues. I did a response to the State of the Union last night in real time. And, you know, that's what people can do. They can just tell their stories. Tell us about your patients and tell us about, you know, how the current policies of the administration or the proposed cuts will impact your patients. You know, it's easier to identify groups of doctors rather than groups of patients to try to advocate. And frankly, most of our patients are just out there trying to work and trying to figure out how to take care of themselves. So, committeetoprotect.org, and we'll be happy to sign you up and get you involved and start advocating right away.
Dr. Rob Davidson, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. It's been great. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. There you go, folks.
Interesting how the conversion of doctors into basically workers rather than business owners has changed their politics.
Yeah, undoubtedly. The broadening of life experiences has also, coming from communities and I guess stations where they see the implications of this stuff more, being denied health care. And yes, time marches on. Progress, the arc of progress is long, I guess. But
stop butchering me.
folks, just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you get the extra content every day. And we're going to start. We're working on some features on the app that are going to be bonuses for members. And we're going to be doing a little bit more bonus video stuff on top of the bonus stuff. It's just it's so great. So become a member today. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, sign up for the AM Quickie. This thing's exploding. AMQuickie.com. AMQuickie.com. You get your news briefs done quick in the morning. You can keep track of what's going on. If you miss a day of the show, you'll at least have a sense of where we are with the news and the stories you need to know. AMQuickie.com. Also available on the app. And let me remind you, Capterra, it's the free online resource that millions use monthly to find the best software solutions for their team or their business. You can pinpoint the problem, filter options to find the right software for your industry. There are more than 700 specific categories of software. That's nuts. Visit Capterra.com/majority for free today. Find the software tools you need for your business. Capterra, that's Capterra.com/majority. Capterra, the software selection simplified. Today is Wednesday, which means that yesterday was Tuesday, but something didn't happen on Tuesday. It's going to happen on Wednesday. Isn't that right, Michael?
Indeed. Tonight, Corey Pine is going to join us to talk about why we need to have a complete and total shutdown on technology until we figure out what the hell is going on.
Here, here.
Then we are going to have Emma Viglin in studio. She is back from Iowa, so we're going to get a ground-level perspective. I'm sure say a lot of very negative things about Pete Buttigieg. Talk about a really good column in the New York Times about how on-the-ground journalists in China are working their way around state censors to cover the carnivorous outbreak in a really effective way.
The what? Something,
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Coronavirus.
Corona?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, not carnivorous.
I'm totally off on that one. I must have seen it first from somebody who spells it like I spell. Coronavirus. Anyways, a whole bunch more. And of course, a David from Debunk and some clips of his Bhaskar debated him very well in Democracy Now. Patreon.com/TMBS. For Friday, I know general admissions tickets to the Bell House are sold out. I think there's a few VIP tickets left if you want to snag them. And where's that board when you need it? Where's that board when you need it? Oh. And April 3rd, come see us at the North Door in Austin with Abby Martin and Anna Kasparian, patreon.com/TMBS.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, oh, I feel like I've been out forever. I did not manage to plug this because I was home with the flu, but it's very good. We have a new edition of History is a Weapon with Sean KB and Matt Chrisman, wherein they talk about utopian socialism. You might be saying to yourself, what's that? Well, ever since the rise of class society, people have been envisioning a better world. They talk about some of the various Christian traditions associated with utopian socialism and how it gave rise to a more scientific form of socialism. And I'm halfway through it right now. It's very good, very interesting, learning a lot from it. That's for our patrons. That's out now. It's a two-parter. Also, later today, we have a Sean episode coming out wherein he talks with a couple of left communist types that he met on Twitter about the tendency of the rate of profit to fall over time. It's some real Marxist stuff. So check it out. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Matt.
Check out Old Literary Hangover. If you listen to their episode about utopia,
did you
socialism,
say Old Literary Hangover?
Yeah, an Old Literary Hangover.
Oh,
episode.
And old. I thought you had changed the name.
It's Ye Old Literary Hangover now. I talked about utopian socialism on the Blithedale Romance episode by Nathaniel Hawthorne. So check that out, folks.
The Blithedale Romance. There you go. See you in the fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh.
Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman.
I'm
hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, going to take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already. Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.